podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. The next time we see Formula One cars on track, the 2023 season will be underway with the Bahrain Grand Prix weekend. Just 3 days of testing to get these new cars sorted. Who nailed it? Who still got issues? Let's find out with someone that not only watched the cars trackside, but has run the track as well. So you got real insight into what was going on. Stuart Codling, editor of GP Racing Magazine. Codders, how's today been for you?
Hot in many ways, because there's not much respite from the sun when you go out during the day. And during the morning, I went up to the end of the drag strip, which crosses the circuit. And if you go up into the control tower of the drag strip, they're up to the fourth floor, there's a little roof balcony, and that gives you a great point of view on the sort of the turns 1, 2, 3 complex, and on the sort of the turns 8, 9, 10 onto the back straight. The penalty from that is that you are in blazing sunshine unless there's a crack of shadow on one side of the top of the tower, so you have to flatten yourself against the wall to actually enjoy any respite from the sun.
Well, let's talk about what you saw today trackside as well. Let's start with Red Bull. They look strong. Not my words, the words of their main competitor, Charles Leclerc. Max Verstappen himself said this, and I quote, "The car works very well. We tried a lot of things. We also found some interesting things. The driving experience is different than last year, and the tyres are different. We've definitely made progress." So it's kind of ominous with Perez in the car this afternoon. He finished top of the timesheets. Not that the timesheets really matter, but if it gets to the end of a 3-day pre-season test and you can't put the soft tyres on and do some fast runs, then you are in trouble. But that's what Red Bull did and set the fastest time. What was your impression of their day, their test, and how you saw Red Bull when you were watching trackside?
Well, it was very interesting because while I was watching trackside, I also ventured out into the sort of the turns 5, 6, 7 area, where there's that very, very fast transition. You sort of do left, right, left, and or is it right, left, right? It's a bit late in the weekend, and it's a very, very, very high speed change of direction. Sometimes you have to bleed off a little bit of speed. Sometimes you can trust the downforce of the car. Interesting test of the driver's confidence. And when I was out there, the Red Bull looked great. When I was watching from my eyrie in the drag strip control tower, Sergio Perez looked like he was making slightly heavy weather on a few laps of the sort of the tricky braking area into turn 10, where you sort of have a small left turn where you carry a bit of speed, and then the big sharp stop to the left hand sort of hairpin onto the back straight. And I was with a photographer who was enormously frustrated that none of the drivers were locking wheels into that, but at the same time the Red Bull looked smooth but not as if he was really trying. So I was a little bit confused by that. But then later in the day, I think they must have been either doing a race sim or some sort of tyre evaluation, not pushing particularly hard. Later in the day, obviously the soft tyres went on and the lap times came down. So Red Bull completely on top of it. It seems like they've done their experimental setups, they've been testing the parameters of the car, and now they can sort of go back and sort of see how it behaves once they've actually dialed it in. So Max was not wrong. They've not really put a wheel wrong or a foot wrong.
No.
This week.
Now, F1 TV and Channel 4's Lawrence Barreto, I saw him tweet last night that he had a quick conversation with Verstappen as walking through the paddock, and he said he's never seen Verstappen look so at ease and so confident before a season. Are you getting that impression as well? Double world champion, great car, teams behind him, clearly number one. This is ominous for everyone else.
Yes, he doesn't even feel like he's quite switched into full business mode yet, because he turned up late for the press conference today and then started yak-yakking to Pierre Gasly, who was next to him, quite loudly, while Logan Sargeant was fielding a question. And I was sort of thinking, you know, if I were Logan Sargent, let me use the subjunctive properly. If I were Logan Sargent, I'd say this was noisy in here. Are we in a branch of Starbucks or something? And the yak yak grew to such an extent that the press conference host Tom Clarkson had to subtly click his fingers to let the drivers know that actually they were being as rude as hell. And later on, Max wasn't even listening to someone while they were asking a question. So he's going to...
I love it. He just doesn't care, does he?
No.
He's like, if he's not engaged with the person, if he thinks the person asking the question's a bit of a dimwit or whatever, he's like, I'm not even listening to you, mate. It's like, what are you talking about? Oh my goodness me. Wow. Okay. It's just, he's just, well, I don't know. He seems... Well, you know, personal life, work life, everything, career-wise, it just seems completely on form. How did Perez do? I mean, he did come top of the timesheets, but how did Checo do in terms of his runs in the car?
Yeah, clocked up a lot of mileage. He was in the over 100 laps club, so he's had a very, very, very productive day.
Brilliant. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk Ferrari. Bolted on a new rear wing today, so clearly bringing new parts to that car, still with a, you know, with a day to go on the test, and the drivers seem happy. They certainly seem, you know, if you're going to pick out top two teams from testing, I would put Red Bull and Ferrari a step ahead of the others. I'd probably put Aston Martin, Alpine, Mercedes kind of in the next group possibly, but Red Bull and Ferrari seem to be out ahead. What did you think of Ferrari's running today and over the last 3 days?
Yeah, that's about the long and the short of it. In yesterday's podcast, we covered the business of the evaluating extreme suspension settings so that they can find where that point at which the car starts to bounce stroke porpoise as it sort of crosses that threshold and the ground effect if becomes too strong and it sucks the car too close to the ground, loses it, the airflow separates, up it comes, back down again, repeat to fade or repeat until the driver suffers a broken coccyx. There was some concern expressed by Carlos Sainz yesterday that in the acceleration phase and then along the back straight, so that's between turns 10 and 11, he felt that the Red Bull was kind of either hooking up a little bit quicker or it just seemed to be drawing away from them. So that could explain why the new rear wing was evaluated today. I'm not sure. I haven't had a good look at it, so I don't know whether it was one that has lower drag or more drag for different circuits that they were just sort of trying out. So we'll see there. But there does seem to be a little bit of concern within the Ferrari camp that their car is fast, but maybe not quite fast enough. But on the other side of the coin, they've got a lot of good miles under the belt and no real problems with operations this week, so they can be relatively satisfied.
Yeah, so Leclerc finished today. He was the top Ferrari, 7/10 off the quick Perez lap that Perez finished off with about an hour to go of the session this afternoon. Perez set that, by the way, around the same time as quali will be next weekend. In terms of the laps completed today, Ferrari about halfway through the field, 143 laps. The best was Haas on 172. The lowest was McLaren. We'll come to them in a bit. So, okay, so if we're thinking that maybe there's a top two after testing, that'll be Red Bull and Ferrari. The next three or four is all up for grabs a little bit. We'll start with Mercedes. I'm tempted to go to Aston Martin next, but we'll start with Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton said today that there are underlying characteristics of that car, problems from last year, that they haven't solved with this year's car. What did it look like for you when you were standing trackside?
Well, it looked like a lot better car than it was yesterday. So for all the downbeatness coming from Lewis's camp and also overnight from Mercedes, the car looked a little bit more like it did on day one in terms of being planted. Now, particularly through the 8, 9, 10 section, which is demanding on the platform stability and the way the car can turn while shedding speed, and also in terms of the rear end stability, which you would be worried about at a corner like that. So for me, it looked neat, and George Russell was at the wheel when I was watching. Just looked particularly neat, very controlled, and not like he was fighting the car. So I instantly thought, you know, whatever they've done, they've either found something or they've gone back to the whatever setup they were running on Monday, or they've gone further in that direction. Did I say Monday? I meant Thursday.
What day of the week is it?
What day of the week is it?
would you concur that they're not at the level of Ferrari and Red Bull from what we've seen this week?
Definitely. So Lewis is right to say there's still a few underlying performance issues, but we have to caveat that by saying that they are much closer and much less troubled than they were this time last year. The car is a whole heap better, and the fact that they're sort of trying to dial out minor aberrant behaviours, certainly when it was going through sort of the 4-5-6 complex, it looked a little less settled than the Ferrari and the Red Bull. But these things should be tunable, you'd kind of hope. So I think they'll be relatively pleased with the way testing's gone. Obviously last night there was the hydraulic failure, but the word from inside the camp was that they were quite pleased to get an early finish and then just sort of fix that and then start doing whatever they wanted to do to the car, because I think they viewed yesterday as not a write-off, but a day that was slightly less productive than the bread in the sandwich, as it were. I think, you know, today and the first day have been the most productive days, and whatever they did yesterday, it didn't really work.
In terms of laps, about the same as Ferrari, 148 laps. They were fourth in the lap count. But otherwise, yeah, good reliability, like you say, for Mercedes. Hamilton was technically second in terms of the lap times with a 1:30.664 gap time of about 3.5 tenths off of the quick Perez lap that he did. Hamilton didn't put in a ton of miles today, 61. That's okay, actually. That's okay. Let's go to Aston Martin next, then. First of all, I want to talk about this story that maybe Crofty was responsible on commentary, whether he was shooting the breeze or has got insight. What about this idea of Sebastian Vettel coming back for an Alonso-Vettel partnership to fill in for Stroll if he doesn't race next weekend? Have you heard anything?
That is very much the sort of thing that you would find in the Coleman Ball section of Private Eye. That's a bored commentator speculating.
Oh, I really want it to be true, though. Apparently he's on a camping holiday with his family right now. But come on, yeah. That would be such a... For Formula One, that would be amazing.
The credit for this story really should go to the Autosport magazine's social team, who jokingly put up a picture of spliced together of Seb and Alonso together, Seb from last year in his Aston Martin garb, and you know, clearly it's you know, talent borrows, genius steals. So it's nice to see the Sky TV crew making use of the creativity of the Autosport social team.
Hey, they've been splitting the commentary 50-50, but that's still hours and hours of talking to do. So I don't mind a bit of speculation, but I would love it to be true. More seriously, though, again, over the last day, whispers, rumours, paddock chatter coming out that the Aston Martin had really decent long-run pace, maybe not ultimate qualifying pace. They can dial that in, that they hadn't stripped the fuel tanks out. They're running decent loads. How did it look for you when you were trackside? And what have you heard about Aston Martin? Because they seem to have taken, I think even Red Bull, it wasn't Adrian Newey, I think it was Christian Horner said today that he thinks the team that's made a big step forward is Aston Martin. What do you think?
Yeah, there is no doubt that car looks a lot neater than last year's car did. It looks less bulky. It looks like they've found... It just looks faster. It looks faster when it's standing still. It looks faster and neater when it's out on track. It has none of the ponderousness of a lot of last year's cars around those sort of slow, unwieldy sections. Like I said, the turn 10 where it has to break from a moderate speed and have stability and then turn and accelerate. And those are the corners where... Quite frankly, last year, the 2022 generation of ground effect cars looked like London buses negotiating steep corners when they were at slow speed. It looks faster. It looked neater in the hands of both drivers. And, you know, Fernando was going for it in the last hour. I saw him completely overcook it under braking for turn one and go off. So he's starting to explore the limits of the car. But once again, we have to caveat that by saying we don't know what level of fuel he had on board at the time. One thing I do know, I've it on quite good authority from people close to members of the team, that they haven't really attempted any low tank runs yet. There might have been the odd one out there, but for the most part, that car has been not quite, maybe not full of fuel at all times, but it's had a decent fuel load on board most of the time it's been out on track. So that is definitely a positive augury.
So if I'm putting Red Bull and Ferrari out front, talk about Mercedes and Aston Martin, they've done well. Alpine and Alfa Romeo, those two teams seem to have done okay. Although Alfa Romeo did have a stoppage with a power unit problem. So again, Ferrari, reliability, we don't want to jump to conclusions. We don't want to see reliability problems from the Ferrari engine. But Alfa Romeo and Alpine, how did those two teams look for you? And what do you think about their chances?
Yeah, if we come to Alfa first, they've been very honest about the shortcomings of last year's car, stemming from the cooling package and the way they'd laid out the radiators, the way they'd plumbed everything in, and also the way they fed those radiators with cool air and then expelled the hot air. They felt that they'd got their architecture wrong in that regard. And that was because it's a moderately hard point of the car. It's difficult, expensive to change. It's not impossible to change in season. We saw some teams do it. But it's difficult, and it's not the work of a moment to move whole heavy bits of the car around and keep it tightly packaged. So that limited them in their development last year, and you could see how the beginning of the year they scored the majority of their points, end of the year they sort of fell back relative to the rest of the field. So it's interesting that the car looks quick, as it did sort of this time last year. They've also had a lot more running than they did this time last year, so maybe there's going to be fewer reliability problems, but at the same time the fact that they have had some does point to the fact that, you know, maybe they've been a bit aggressive on the cooling architecture again. So who knows, I'm not sure they've dialed that out. Alpine seemed to be quite the happy ship. I was at a press conference given by them with technical director Matt Harmon, and he said they're going to be bringing developments to the car, or they're aiming to bring developments to the car at pretty much every race this season. It's something they did last season, and they were very pleased by their ability to develop in season from race to race. And that's not necessarily in terms of things that you see externally. You know, that we in the media and the fans love to get excited about new front wings, new rear wings, new side pod flicks, stuff like that. That's not necessarily all the things that go on in development. So he says that they've already got a development package in the works. There will be some new elements on the car for the Bahrain Grand Prix next weekend, and the trickle will continue. And he exuded the air of someone who was pleased with the way this weekend's gone.
Yeah, he mentioned that there's going to be some new bits on the car already for next weekend, and a new ride height system. I'm not sure what that is. No, I think it's anything sort of trickery or anything. Just, again, a development that they're bringing. Really aggressive plans. Really impressive, actually. Now, we might run out of time to do every single team today, but just to have a look at, if you do put teams in a kind of bottom four with Haas, McLaren, Williams and AlphaTauri, I'd like to talk about McLaren and AlphaTauri with you. First one, McLaren, lowest of the lap runs today, less than 100 laps, 81 laps, I think. They were constantly stopping to strengthen the front wheel, whatever you want to call them.
The winglets,
the eyebrows. Yeah, winglets. And so they were always having to stop and strengthen them, which will be fixed for next weekend. They know what the problem is. But again, it's a bit like last year, not serious with the brake problems, that they just couldn't get all those laps done today. And I mentioned on the YouTube video about McLaren to Matt Q, who I did the video with for our YouTube channel last night, and he said he felt that Zach Brown's, like the way he's carrying himself even, he's trying to like not read too much into it, but he just didn't seem very happy. Have they got some work to do at McLaren?
Yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, and not just with the gaffer tape and the glue gun on the winglets. How best to describe this exchange I had with the aforementioned photographer on the roof of the the drag control tower, I said something along the lines of I think something must have been said at dinner, because the front end and the back end of that McLaren are not speaking to one another. You watch that car attempt to negotiate a corner, like the sort of the turn 8, 9, 10 section here in Bahrain, and it's just shockingly poor. If Oscar Piastri, who was driving the car at the time, had sent a postcard to the apex of turn 10, it would have taken a week to arrive. He was that far away from it. The car is just dreadful.
No.
I because, you know, I'm paid by the word, so I engaged in flowery language, and the photographer used just one word to describe the current McLaren, which is one that I will not relate on this podcast, because people's children might have walked into the kitchen while they're listening to this on their smart speaker.
Holy moly. Wow, holy moly. And finally, I mean, good luck to McLaren. Final bit of chat today on AlphaTauri. Report coming out from Germany, from Auto, Motor and Sport, about a possible change to AlphaTauri. We mentioned this when Dietrich Mateschitz sadly passed away last year. And I said at the time that, you know, the first thing you have to say is, are both teams secure on the grid? But it felt too early. It felt disrespectful at the time. The chap had just passed away, and we're talking about, you know, oh, is AlphaTauri? And it just felt too soon, too disrespectful. But now a report coming out from Germany suggesting that the team could either be moved to the UK, which would make sense, Red Bull powertrains, yeah, Milton Keynes, and or perhaps sold. You know, Honda would like to get in, Andretti would like to get in. Has the team responded yet, according to anything you know? Have they said anything according to these rumours?
No, my colleague Oleg Karpov scurried down to AlphaTauri to try and intercept Franz Tost, but he was going into the Red Bull hospitality, funnily enough, so who knows what they might be might have been discussing. So at the time of speaking, no official line and no denial has been issued. It's whether to take this with a pinch of salt or not, you know, Auto, Motor und Sport stories can be quite well sourced, and generally they don't print absolute nonsense. You know, they don't just cut and paste stuff that they've read on Reddit or various other forums. But not everything that they prognosticate as nail on truth turns out to be right. So it'll be interesting. It could be a kite flying exercise, but there is an element of plausibility to it, because as you said, Dietrich Mateschitz, the visionary behind Red Bull, no longer with us. His responsibilities have been hived off to various people, as was his wish in his will, that various people, you know, it was managed in a different structure, in a more corporate way. And of course, with regime change, eventually the wishes of the previous leader are gradually unpicked, no matter how publicly respectful they are of such a person's memory or whatever. When the new sheriff's in town, they run things differently. And Mateschitz was passionate about sport and about motor racing, and he bought two Formula One teams. So it's not difficult to see that someone who's perhaps less enthusiastic about motor racing than he would think, why do we need two? Especially when the so-called junior team has got a 28-year-old who's for which Formula One is not his first rodeo as the lead driver.
We'll wait and see on that one. But thank you. Thank you, Codders. Thank you so much for the last 3 days. We've loved it on the podcast. And now the countdown's on to the start of the season. Hey, by the way, GP Racing Magazine, how does it fall in terms of, because obviously you're a monthly magazine, so it sort of, sometimes it's convenient, sometimes it's not, in terms of what you can put on the front cover. But when can we look out for a new edition of that on the shelves?
It is on the shelves now. It came out yesterday. But yes, you are correct. This compressed launch and test and race season is very, very bad for the grey hair quotient of a magazine editor, a monthly magazine editor, especially when the teams are not actually launching new cars but launching old cars with new paint jobs on. So that's particularly irksome. But you know, we've managed to squeeze as much latest photography as possible into it, and of course we have the latest insight in a bumper 132 page issue featuring all sorts of different stuff. We take a look at the Russell Hamilton dynamic, we have a look at where Max Verstappen fits among the greats of Formula One, we have a look at what's going on with Ferrari as well, we will be following that up with a piece in the next issue. We talk about the team principal merry-go-round, because half the teams on the grid now have bosses who've been in post for a year or less, so interesting times, the era of the rent-a-manager.
We look forward to reading it, and we look forward to the next edition of the Flat Chat podcast with Codders, Q and Mark Gallagher. Thank you for listening to the Autosport podcast today, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Sports Social Podcast Network.